From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross.
Yo, it's the Lonely Island.
We're ending the year with some laughs. We'll hear from three Saturday Night Live alums, Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi, who together are the Lonely Island. They made funny video hip-hop parodies for SNL. Samberg says it all started when they were young, and Schaffer and Taconi recorded their own rap over a track by the Wu-Tang Clan.
It's all the Wu-Tang and people on their block being like, yo, did you hear this guy, Shaheem, got shot? And everyone's like, oh my God, no. And it's like really intense. And then Keeve and Yorm dubbed themselves over it going, oh no, not Shaheem.
And we'll hear from the duo behind the Comedy Central series, Key and Peele, Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. They're both biracial, and a lot of their comedy is about race. Some is about the first biracial president.
Jordan has a really amazing Obama impersonation.
Thank you for saying that, Keith.
First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, editor of the website TV Worth Watching, filling in for Terry Gross, who's out with a cold. We're ending the year with another of our favorite interviews of 2013. It's from June, when Terry spoke with three alumni of Saturday Night Live. Andy Samberg, who was a cast member, and writers Akiva Schaffer and Yorma Taconi. Collectively, they're known as the Lonely Island. Their digital shorts for SNL have included such famous hip-hop video parodies as, well, let's call it Bleep in a Box, with Andy Samberg and Justin Timberlake, and Three Way, with Samberg, Timberlake, and Lady Gaga. Samberg currently stars in the Fox sitcom Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Schaffer directed the film The Watch, and Taconi played the pretentious artist Booth Jonathan on the HBO series Girls. When Terry spoke with The Lonely Island in June, the group had just released its third album of hip-hop-inspired parodies, called The Whack Album. Let's start with a track from The Whack. This is YOLO, and it features guest vocalists Adam Levine and Kendrick Lamar.
Is a precious gift, so don't get too crazy. It's not worth the risk.
You know that we are still young, so don't be dumb. Don't trust anyone, 'cause you only live once.
You only live once, that's the motto. So take your chill pill, ease off the throttle.
Yeah. Never go to loud clubs, 'cause it's bad for your ears. Your friends will all be sorry when they can't hear.
And stay the hell away from drugs, 'cause they not legal. Then bury all your money in the backyard like a beagle.
'Cause you should never trust the bank, they've been known to fail. And never travel by car or bus, boat or by rail.
And don't travel by plane, and don't travel at all. Build a bomb shelter basement with titanium walls.
And wear titanium suits in case pianos fall on ya.
And never go with saunas, 'cause they're crawling with piranhas.
And never take the stairs, 'cause they're often unsafe.
You only live once, don't let it go to waste.
You know that we are still young, so hold on for the fun. You meet till it's done, you only live once.
Yeah, and here's another piece of advice. Stay away from kids, 'cause their hair is filled with mad light.
There's no such thing as too much Purell. This is a cautionary tale, worth to George Orwell.
So don't. Andy Samberg, Yorma Taconi, Akiva Schaffer, welcome to Fresh Air. Thank you so much for coming. So let's start with YOLO, which we just heard, which usually means you only live once, but in yours it's you ought to look out. So which one is more of the motto of your life? which one were you more brought up with?
You know, our version begins as you only live once, and then by the end, the conclusion is you ought to look out. So I think it's kind of like telling our story of getting older and using more discretion and more caution. But it's also a cautionary tale. Like, you ought to look out, and you only live once. It's somewhere in between, I think, is what.
Yeah, you can go right far. Way. You can go too far with you ought to look out as well, until you're just basically sitting in a room by yourself, rocking back and forth, holding your knees and not wanting to go outside.
Howard Hughes-ing it, so to speak.
Yeah, so that could be bad too.
Well, my favorite line is that there's no such thing as too much Purell. So the hook of this, the song part is like really catchy. Did you really want to be regular songwriters as opposed to comic songwriters when you were young or now?
Not really. I mean, this is Andy. I'm speaking personally. I always wanted to do comedy in one way, shape, or form. And I did mess around with comedy music when I was in, like, high school and college.
Yeah, we all did, for
sure.
And
then we sort of fell into it on accident when the three of us decided to move to L.A. together and we were all living together. And our roommate had, like, a little digital 8-track, and we would have some drinks and come home and make joke songs. And that's sort of how it started. But it was never... Any ability music-wise is completely happenstance. We sort of stumbled into that part of it.
We grew up in Berkeley, California. This is Yorma speaking. Hi. Listening to hip-hop and R&B. And so when we had our friends' 8-track, we would just loop old funk samples, like sort of the way that, you know, hip-hop came about, and make little beats and just make songs till the wee hours of the morning.
Now, on your new album and on, you know, some of the digital shorts, you have, like, real... hip-hop stars on there with you. So what are some of the things that you've learned from working with people who do this seriously for real?
That they're better than us.
Yeah, it's harder than it seems.
We learned a lot about recording from Justin Timberlake, legitimately, because that was so early on when we did the first one, Blank in a Box. I don't know if what you're allowed to say.
Yeah, not the thing that's in the box.
Okay, great. Richard in a box. Yeah.
Richard in a box.
But that was pretty early on in our comedy music career. So we were still really just doing, like, teaching ourselves how to use the stuff and didn't really know how to use, like, Pro Tools or any of that stuff. So when he came and did that song with us, he taught us, like, 10 things, I would say, that we still use to this day about just proper recording and kind of little tricks about using, you know, the left speaker versus the right speaker and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're just joining us, my guests are Andy Samberg, Yorma Taconi, and Akiva Schaffer, the three members of Lonely Island, the group that did all those great digital shorts, music like hip-hop digital shorts for Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. Now they have a new album, and that's called The Whack Album, and we should hear another track from it. So since we were talking about Justin Timberlake, why don't we hear Three Way, which is really hysterical, and it's been a digital short on Saturday Night Live, and now it's on the new album. So I'd like you to talk about how you came up with this idea, and the idea is basically, it's cool for two guys to be together if it's a three-way with a girl in between.
How do we come up
They're
with
looking
it?
For any excuse to get into bed together, these two guys.
That's the real.
There was the third in the trilogy of these two guys, these two characters. And, you know, in the first two, there were all sorts of allusions to, like, how into each other they are. And we felt like that was sort of the natural next step.
How deeply they were looking into each other's eyes and how close they were.
Yeah. They're best friends who find each other extremely cool and sexy. But it was also a case of just SNL circumstance, which was Justin was hosting and Lady Gaga was the musical guest. And we knew that for the third one, it would be a real anti-upper to throw Lady Gaga into the mix. And naturally, when you add a girl to the two guys, it turns into a three-way. So then we had to think of a comedy angle for that, and that's what we came up with.
Were they both willing, or did you have to convince them?
Oh, they were willing. When we did the second one, Mother Lover, me, Keeve, and Yorm were the more hesitant ones. We were like, I don't know if we want to go back to that well because, you know, D in a Box went over so well. I don't know if we want to mess with something that is generally liked. And we were like, you know, if we don't do it, we're safe. And Justin said, that's exactly why we should do it. Because who would have the audacity to do it again?
That was very similar on Three Way as well. I mean, we had the idea really early on in the week. And usually, you know, we only come up with the idea on a Thursday night, record it Thursday night, and start filming Friday into Saturday morning and start editing Saturday morning until the show airs. And that's basically the you know, natural way that we did any of our digital shorts. And this one, we actually had the idea on a Monday, and then the three of us were totally hesitant the entire week, and Justin kept being like, no, it's great. Just do it.
He's very confident. And to answer your question, Gaga was 100% into it.
That's like, a lot of work to do in a few days. I mean, because
it's like your
videos, it's like there's an edit every few seconds, and the scene keeps changing, and there's costume changing. It changes. It's a lot of work.
So, I mean, the credit also to SNL and to their crew and their system that's built in to be able to pull something off that fast. You know, they had props and crew of, you know, people putting together sets overnight on a Thursday for a Friday shoot. Which constantly, when we'd come up with an idea late Thursday night and be like, okay, this is it. And then all these people have to be like, okay, all the wardrobe and everybody in the wig department.
We need a horse head and a hot air balloon basket.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you get so used to it that then you show up on Friday morning and you're like, where's our horse head? And they're like, guys, you gave us the song at like 5 a.m.
Yeah, we're having a puppet master make it.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it's an incredible machine to be a part of, and it's the only way it can really happen is to have hundreds of people all working towards this one goal at the same time, because there's no choice because it's airing Saturday.
Okay, so this is Three Way by Lonely Island, and it's from the new album, The Whack Album, and we're going to hear Andy Samberg, Justin Timberlake, and a little bit of Lady Gaga. She's more prominent on the video than she is on the song. So here it is. a cleaned up version. Three way.
Your mom says hi, Jinx.
But it's having sex.
You know, I just got a page from a girl that I met last week at the Payless
Shoe Source. I also have a cutie to call who loves the way I knock on her boots.
Well, it's time to Mac. Let's handle that in 2 to 6 hours. We'll meet back then. We're broke. Now let's shoot.
Roll up to her crib with some Bartles and James.
Hop off the bus with the Alizé.
Now hold up, player. What you diggity doing here?
I should diggity ask you the same.
Then she sang.
Boys, I want you both. I hope that you think that's cool.
Same word.
I know most guys won't freak together.
But she forgot about the golden rule.
It's okay when it's in a three-way. It's not gay when it's in a three-way. With a honey in the middle, there's some leeway. The area's great in a 1-2-3-way.
Normally, I don't get down with dudes.
But tonight is a special exception.
Green.
So you're my best friend. You're thick and thin.
Now it's time to make a triple.
That was Three Way featuring Andy Samberg, Justin Timberlake, and Lady Gaga. More with The Lonely Island, who wrote that song, after a break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's June 2013 interview, one of our favorites of the year, with the members of The Lonely Island, Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi.
When you started working together, when you were, what, in junior high school?
Yeah, we were all in different sort of goofy music groups. I was in a group with two friends of mine called Strike Three because we had all been dissed by girls, so we'd all struck out.
So did you do for real music or comic music?
No, it was all jokes. Okay. All joke rap music.
Yeah, me and my friends would record ourselves on, you know, little boom boxes with a record button on cassette and do like comedy raps that we'd written in high school.
Yeah.
I will say I wasn't a part of it, but I feel like I remember the first actual Lonely Island piece of audio, which is Akiva and Yorma recorded themselves over this skit from a Wu-Tang Clan album. And it's like this really intense...
it's very sad, actually.
It's a bunch of... Yeah, it's all the Wu-Tang and people on their block being like, yo, did you hear this guy, Shaheem, got shot? And everyone's like, oh my God, no. And it's like really intense. And then Akiva and Yorma dubbed themselves over it going, oh no, not Shaheem.
Wait, is he the guy from... Oh, sorry, I interrupted. Sorry, what were you saying?
It was just us being super lame.
There's so many members of the Wu-Tang Clan, you can just slip a couple nerds in there. Yeah,
just two nerdy guys who get railroaded and talked over.
Part of the gang.
So what were your mother's reactions to you listening to rap music, that some of which was probably very sexist and some of which was probably, you know, very much... bragging about violence? I'm assuming that your mothers were... I think all your parents moved to Berkeley from New York in the 60s and 70s. That's what I read. I'm not sure it's right.
Yeah. That is correct. Yeah,
but I'm sure that they had, you know, an ethic that was kind of different from, like, the kind of sexist bragging on a lot of rap.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. As do we.
We had to hide it in our house like pornography. Literally, the cassette tapes.
Absolutely.
I hid them.
And my mother would go through and actually edit my tapes. Like, she'd edit out the songs that were in any way. Like, you know, I had a Fat Boys album that she edited, and I remember her hiding Run DMC's album Raisin Hell, which was one of my first albums that I had on vinyl, and hiding it behind this bookshelf, and I would have to go and sneak and listen to it. And by today's standards, it's like, I mean, it's the most tame thing ever, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I don't want to throw my
mom took away License to Ill because I did it like this, same. I did it like that, I did it with a wiffle ball bat, so the first Beastie Boys record, and that was enough. She heard that line and took away the whole record.
Little did they know that we were listening to like Too Short and stuff like that.
I was going to say, I have two older sisters.
The Eazy-E was hidden.
Yeah, I have two older sisters, and Easy and Too Short were on all the time. And I think because I was the youngest, by the time it got to me and what I was listening to, they were kind of just tired.
Yeah, you had a distinct advantage. Both me and Kiva are the oldest child.
My dad got into rap. Like, we'd like bump the Boys in the Hood soundtrack in the car on the way to soccer practice and stuff.
So you all got on Saturday Night Live at the same time. Andy as a performer and writer, and Yorma and Akiva as writers. Did you have a joint audition, or did you each audition separately?
Auditioned separately. I had been doing a lot of stand-up, so I auditioned first. And then, you know, we had been writing for the MTV Movie Awards, and Jimmy Fallon was the host. So he was there along with Steve Higgins and Mike Shoemaker, who were producers at SNL, and a bunch of SNL writers came with them. And we got along really well with all of them. So Jimmy and Higgins and Shoemaker recommended us to Lorne. So I came in and auditioned, and it went well. And then they said, you know, these guys are best when you have the three of them together, you know, which was correct. So they offered Akiva and Yorma to audition as well. Yorma did audition.
Yeah, which is the most nerve-wracking thing I will ever do. And it's being beamed to, like, NBC West Coast, and Lauren and Tina are in the room, and it is totally nerve-wracking.
And Akiva, who had no interest in being a cast member, opted to just have a writer's meeting. It went well enough that I got hired in the cast, and Keeve and Yorma both got hired as writers, but I think what they did not realize they were getting was two writers who also happened to be really good directors. And that was...
Thanks, Andy.
You're welcome. It's a part of the story. Yep. you know, because when we brought in...
We were not
hired
to make shorts.
No, not at all. But, you know, the classic thing that we have always done, and I think Keeve is really the spearheader of that, is to be really proactive and to just, if you have an idea you like, go out and make it. And then you don't have to explain to people why something's funny. You can just show them. So these guys went out and shot a video on their own called Bing Bong Brothers and brought it in and said, would you ever air this? And they were like, well, we're trying to break all these new cast members, so it would be confusing to put something on with you guys in it. But definitely continue to do these and bring them in, because we always need pre-tapes to turn sets over during commercial breaks or when we're in an act break, kind of a thing. You know, we can run a pre-tape, and that gives us more time to do costume changes and set changes. So we just started shooting them on our own. And the third one we made was Lazy Sunday. And after that, they were like, okay, you guys are a film unit. Keep going.
Yeah. And Akiva was always our sort of our main director. Like, I mean, I kind of learned how to direct from him and to edit as well. And so we would, you know, in the beginning, it was always Keeve as the director, and I would be making a lot of the music for what we were doing. And then that sort of changed when I started doing some of the MacGruber's and some other ones, and so I started doing shorts as well.
Akiva, did you study videos so you could really make yours look authentic?
I was studying for it my whole life, not knowing I was studying for it. I was just obsessed with them. I didn't have cable growing up, and I would go to friends' houses and just watch MTV. Like, honestly, like it was like I would have like sugar cereal and watch MTV, because those are things that were not allowed in my house. I would just do it like a fiend. Like, I wouldn't even care if they were home or they were asleep. I would just watch.
And
sure.
Keith's parents had his TV under lock and key. Literally, like there was a key that you had to. How did it work, Keith? I mean, you just sneak up into the room and take
it.
The
only
key.
Lasted like a month, but there was a month where my mom like got off out of some catalog, like a thing where it's like, you know, where it like somehow it locks the power cord or something. You know, kind of the equivalent today of like, you know, putting a password on people's iPads, which I'm sure they do so that the kids can't play with their iPads. But it was a much more clumsy box that made it that you couldn't turn on the television.
It's like a chastity belt for your cable box.
I want to squeeze in one more song from the new Lonely Island album, the WAC album. And this is an excerpt of Diaper Money, and it's an excerpt because several of the verses aren't clean enough to play on the radio. But describe what the premise of this one is.
Diaper Money arrives in three suites.
each represented by a verse from each of the three members. The first one is Diaper Money, which is Akiva, who has two young children, and it's sort of bragging about being a dad. The second one is Yorma, which is something I can't say, but it's about how proud he is to be in a monogamous married relationship with his wife. Mm-hmm. And the third verse is me bragging about how I've got an incredible grave plot lined up.
He's very excited about his coffin.
And how I would say it's like a meditation on the inevitability of death.
Yeah. We're in a more mature place in our
like
lives
a hilarious meditation on that. It's, you know, it's about we're all in our mid-30s now and we're all either married or engaged to be married and having kids or headed towards kids. And it's our reality and we're like, why not embrace it and make an anthem for that?
And sadly, this is our most mature work to date.
I got that grave plot. It's right off the highway. Wobbledy wobbledy drop into my grave plot. You afraid of death? Well, I'm afraid not. Cause I got the bomb spot right off the highway. I did it my way, a very small percent of the time way. I got my coffin picked out. Styrofoam painted like wood tricked out. It's even got handles to lower me smooth. And my tombstone only has
minimal typos.
Grave plot, I got that grave plot. I got that grave plot right next to my dad. I got that diaper money, I got that wife too. I got that grave plot, I'm a grown ass man.
That's The Lonely Island, Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi. Terry spoke with them in June. It's one of our favorite interviews of the year. I'm David Bean Cooley, and this is Fresh Air.
The Neubauer Family Foundation supports WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, a national network of five hospitals dedicated to excellence in cancer care. More at cancercenter.com. From Lumosity.com, with web-based brain games created by neuroscientists to improve memory and attention. Learn more at Lumosity.com. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. This is NPR.
Coming up, Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele of the sketch comedy show Key and Peele on Comedy Central. Peele often portrays President Obama, and Key plays Luther, Obama's anger translator, who says the things Obama can't. Much of their comedy is about race and comes in part from their experiences growing up biracial. They met in Chicago, where they were part of the improv scene. This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, in for Terry Gross. We're determined to end the year laughing. So we're continuing our holiday week series of some of our most entertaining interviews of the year with a duo behind the Comedy Central series Key and Peele, Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. A lot of their comedy is about race. Perhaps because they're biracial, they're perfectly comfortable satirizing white people and African Americans, as well as satirizing everybody else. Both Key and Peele have a white mother and a black father. The New Yorker's TV critic, Emily Nussbaum, described their biracialism as a golden ticket to themes rarely explored on television. Key and Peele met when they were part of the improv scene. They worked together on the sketch comedy series Mad TV. Terry spoke with Key and Peele last month and started by playing what may be their most famous sketch, which went viral on the internet. It introduced the character of Luther, President Obama's anger translator.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. Now, before I begin, I just want to say that I know a lot of people out there seem to think that I don't get angry. That's just not true. I get angry a lot. It's just that the way I express passion is different from most. So, just so there's no more confusion, we've hired Luther here to be my anger translator. Luther?
Hi.
First off, concerning the recent developments in the Middle Eastern region, I just want to reiterate our unflinching support for all people and their right to a democratic process.
Hey, all y'all dictators out there, keep messing around and see what happens. Just see what happens. Watch!
Also, to the governments of Iran and North Korea, we once again urge you to discontinue your uranium enrichment program.
Hey, Mahmoud, Kim Jong, I think I already done told both y'all, 86 your I'm gonna come over there and do it for y'all. Please test me and see what happens.
On the domestic front, I just want to say to my critics, I hear your voices and I'm aware of your concerns.
So maybe if you can chill the hell out for like a second, then maybe I can focus on some you know?
That goes for everybody. Including members of the Tea Party.
Oh, don't even get me started on these motherfuckers right here.
I want to assure you that we will be looking for new compromises with the GOP in the months ahead.
And you know these motherfuckers won't say no before I even suggest some
Now, I know that a lot of folks say that I haven't done a good job at communicating my accomplishments to the public.
Because y'all motherfuckers don't listen!
Since being in office, we've created 3 million new jobs.
3 million new jobs.
We ended the war in Iraq.
Ended a war, y'all. We ended a war. Remember that?
These achievements should serve as a reminder that I am on your side.
I am not a Muslim.
And that my intentions as your president are coming from the right place.
They're coming from Hawaii, which is where I'm from, which is in the United States of America, y'all. Okay? This is ridiculous. I have a birth certificate. I have a birth certificate. I have a hot, diggity, daggity, mama say, mama samu, makusa birth certificate, you dumbass crackers.
Okay. So, Luther, rope it in.
You dial it back, Luther, damn.
Keegan-Michael Key, Jordan Peele, welcome to Fresh Air. Thank you so much for being here. So let's start with the sketch that we just heard. How did you come up with the idea for the Obama anger translator?
Well, we knew we wanted to do something with Obama because we actually felt that Obama was kind of responsible for us even getting a show in the first place, because there's this biracial person who might, you know, have to ride the divide between two different races. And we weren't sure exactly how we wanted to do it, but we kind of went through a bunch of ideas and then we decided. Jordan has a really amazing Obama impersonation.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Okay.
And we know we're frustrated when a person like Joe Wilson had screamed during that State of the Union address when he was like, you lie to the president. And we were like, the president can't react the way millions of Americans right now are going, oh, God, he can't say anything. He can't rail at this man. He can't get upset. What if we had a surrogate who could get upset for him? And that was the embryonic stage of creating Luther, so that he'd have somebody who could translate him when he's having like an internal fit of pique, but could do it externally for him.
This was also in the peak of the birther movement and things like that. So there were all these little issues that we felt were going unaddressed by Obama, because I think, the way we've described it before is that he couldn't come off like an angry black man, especially early on. So, you know, what Luther says kind of are things that ring true to us, and we felt like it was giving the truth a voice in a lot of ways.
Right. Yeah.
So you use some obscenities in your sketches, and you're on Comedy Central, as is The Colbert Report and The Daily Show, and they bleep those words on their show. So how come you can say them and they can't?
Gosh, I feel like we are bleeped.
Oh, you
like
know what? I've heard some of it on the internet, so maybe you're not bleeped.
That's
on
what
the
it is,
internet.
Terry. Yeah, yeah. We definitely get bleeped on the
air. I've heard some of it
air.
On TV and then catch up on the internet, so I bet that's it.
There have been a couple of episodes, I know at least one in the first season, where we got a TVMA rating, so we could get away with saying some things that we felt like were essential to get the joke.
Yeah, I like sometimes we talk to the network and we're like, guys, in this particular episode, could we get a penis dispensation so we can say this word, so we can say that word or this word?
I think if we had our druthers, we would be unbleeped every episode.
Yeah, every episode, every sketch, yeah.
But we do find it very interesting. I mean, the network enjoys the edginess of their programming and of our show, but then there's these kind of sometimes feel, what feels like silly guidelines that of certain words that you can't say. It's such a strange thing when you look at what the boundary of acceptable and not acceptable is on television. You know, we shoot people in the head in just about every episode, but we can't get away with saying certain words.
Yeah.
Jordan, when you met President Obama, which I know you did you get some insights into how to perform him?
I would say so. Yeah, I think I walked out of there a little bit more confident with my impression, and I actually did it for him at one point. And he says, I'll do a pretty good me myself. He said something like that. But he is a close talker. He's a touchy guy. Like he will.
He is a very tactile individual.
He will touch you on the shoulder and kind of that big brother or father figure kind of way. And you really do feel sort of shepherded by him. He's very funny. So I think after meeting him, I was inclined to turn up the humor of him, that he has a sense of humor. And again, I think that is also something he, in the beginning of his presidency, he couldn't really explore and couldn't show. He had to be almost a one-dimensional, stoic leader during that first election.
You're going to bring out the anger translator to talk about Obama's anger at the Obamacare website?
I think that may happen. We're cooking something up right now to do for about the ACA. But otherwise, I think Luther is, Luther is raring to go. He's like, who the hell, man? Come on. Who doesn't want health care? Go ahead, break your leg then. You know what? Even better. I'm going to come over there and break your leg for you.
All right, Luther.
And then we'll see. Okay. Sorry, Luther. Sir. I apologize, sir.
Let's keep it together.
People is crazy. Yep. People is stupid.
People is crazy.
And I'm
going to
say it right now. Mostly white people. Stupid.
All right. Well, let's,
young white man,
let's
26.
Rope it in.
Get your act together.
Let's not make it racial. Let's not make anything racial.
That's fabulous.
Ever.
I apologize, sir. I apologize.
Oh, my guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, and together they're Key and Peele that have their own sketch comedy show on Comedy Central. Let's take a short break here, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, and together they're Key and Peele, and they have a sketch comedy show on Comedy Central, which is called Key and Peele. A character you do, Keegan, that I really love is the substitute teacher. And this is this is a teacher who's taught in in an inner city school for like 20 years, and now he's teaching in like a middle class school that's like somewhere at approximately 100% white.
That's right.
I want to play the first of these sketches that you did with the substitute teacher. And then we'll, sure, we'll talk about the character some more. But first, just like physically describe how you look in this sketch so we can get an image in our minds.
Well, I think what you're dealing with is a guy who has a real kind of military persona about him. He's very rigid and a little haggard, yet still aggressive. He's got his hairline is really far back. He's been balding probably since his 20s, and he has a very kind of tight, like this isn't the best way to describe it, is like a high and tight kind of mustache. So he looks like he might have been in the army or something, or an MP. And he wears a short sleeve drab shirt and like a twill tie. And he just looks all business. Like he's ready to rumble.
Okay, so this is the substitute teacher, performed by my guest Keegan-Michael Key.
All right, listen up, y'all. I'm y'all substitute teacher, Mr. Garvey. I taught school for 20 years in the inner city, so don't even think about messing with me. Y'all feel me? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a roll here. Jay Quellen. Where's Jay Quellen at? No Jay Quellen here? Yeah.
Do you mean Jacqueline?
Okay, so that's how it's gonna be. Y'all wanna play. Okay, then. I've got my eye on you, Jay Quellen. Balake. Where is Balake at? There's no Balake here today. Yes, sir.
My name's Blake.
Are you out of your damn mind?
Blake?
What? Do you want to go to war, Balaki?
No.
Because we could go to war.
No.
I'm for real. I'm for real. So you better check yourself.
That's really great.
I love it because Balaki. Balake. He's got two different pronunciations.
Jordan, do you want to describe how you end the sketch?
And then, I believe Garvey says, Joe Nathan. And then,
is it Timothy?
It's Timothy.
Timothy.
Yes. I mean, maybe at one point it was Joe Nathan.
It was Joe Nathan at one point.
But yes, he says, Timothy. And then, you know, me, the first black student we've seen sort of emerges from behind a white student. Present. And then it's over. It's a pretty absurd little piece of heightening.
We went back and forth on present too. We're like, should he say, is that too silly?
Is that too silly?
Is present too silly?
Nobody says present.
Nobody. But... Everybody knows. But we just decided to go with it anyway. We had here. Mm-hmm. Present and just good old fashioned present, but
somehow it works.
Somehow it works. Yeah.
So, when you were in school, were there a lot of students in your classes that had names that their parents had obviously creatively made up from scratch?
Oh yeah.
Definitely. Keegan's from Detroit, and I'm from New York, and
so the answer to that question is yes.
Yeah. What were some of your real favorites, like of the real names?
There were literally in my neighborhood, there were two kids. Now, this is kind of a urban legend. Jordan and I both know this legend. Everybody knows this legend in kind of African-American lore. There's always somebody in your neighborhood named Arangelo or Lamangelo. And that's spelled, Arangelo is spelled O-R-A-N-G-E-J-E-L-L-O. So, you know, that's, and then.
Right, which, I mean, if we really, you know, dig deep into it, you know, especially when talking about African-American culture,
sure,
it's got, you know, names have such a deep history, you know, just from having our names taken away in the first place.
Exactly,
sort of
right.
Renamed, and, you know, now, feels like 80% of African-American population has the name Washington or Jefferson or some president or slave owner's name. And, you know, I almost wonder, is this part of a way of taking back the principle of naming your, I might be going too far into this, naming your kid something of your choice.
We were talking about your substitute teacher character, Keegan, and I want to play another sketch with that substitute teacher, the guy who taught in an inner city school for 20 years and now is in a middle class, predominantly white school teaching as a substitute. And this sketch is really funny. It's the same group of students as we heard in the one where he's taking attendance and everybody has and he's mispronouncing everybody's names because he's used to unusual names. So this sketch starts with one of the students asking a question to the teacher.
Mr. Garvey.
What is it, Aaron?
Some of us need to leave a few minutes early today.
Oh, is that so?
Mm-hmm.
And what, pray tell, is the reason for this premature exodus?
Yearbook photos. We have to leave 15 minutes early to meet up with our clubs.
All right, you know what? That might work with other substitute teachers, but I taught in the inner city for over 20 years. Now y'all want to leave my class early so y'all can go meet up at the club. Ain't none of y'all old enough to go to the damn club. Ridiculous.
Mr. Garvey.
God, son of a bitch! Did I stutter?
Just then? Yes.
I'm gonna throw you out the damn window. What, Jay Quinlan?
Mr. Garvey, we're telling the truth. We have clubs at this school. We have clubs for special interests.
Okay. What the hell club are you in, Jay Quinlan?
Future Leaders of America.
Okay. Okay. How would you know if you're gonna be a leader in the future? Is there a stargate in your bedroom? Can you travel through time, Jay Quellen?
No.
Just sit the flip down.
That's Keegan-Michael Key as a substitute teacher. And Jordan Peele, do you want to explain how you end the sketch?
I believe Timothy raises his hand and Mr. Garvey says, well, you know, he calls on Timothy. You know, what club do you have to go? And Timothy says, yeah, I got to go pick up my daughter.
You're excused.
So I'm wondering, Keegan, did you model that on a teacher that you had?
Actually, he is modeled on a guidance counselor that I had in grade school. And I went to a predominantly black grade school, Catholic grade school in Detroit. And so that kind of aggression came from this particular guidance counselor. Because, you know, we had really fantastic kids at my school and super smart kids at my school and a lot of kind of roughhouse kids at my school. And he was it's that same energy. And Jordan really honed in on this energy when the sketch was being written, which was the one thing that never leaves him is he's always ever vigilant. He's hyper vigilant about the misbehaving. And, you know, there's lots of perhaps social underpinnings as to why he believes every student behaves that way, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, he was based on this one guy who the attitude of him, the tone of him is based on this one guy.
You both have white mothers, African-American fathers. Was it ever an issue of like which group you're going to fit into, if you're going to identify with the white students or the black students, or were there groups within the schools you went to that were multiculturally enough that you didn't have to worry about like choosing a team?
Yeah, for me, I think the reason I went into theater ultimately was because that was one of those multicultural groups, because you identify with other people that share similar passions to you. So it didn't matter how much melanin was in their skin. It's just that clan is born out of love and passion, as opposed to born out of some sense of obligation to belong to a certain group. So for me, that's what salvaged my life, I think, in high school for the most part.
Yeah, it's such a loaded question, I think, for both of us. But I really do feel like growing up, you know, I was lucky enough to be in a great town and great schools that had a certain amount of diversity. And so, you know, this is all of this kind of goes into our work. And I think both, you know, like Keegan was saying, I think the reason both of us became actors is because we did, you know, a fair amount of code switching growing up and still do. There is these identity questions. And, you know, all I can say is my mother was very good in that she helped me feel like I was a special person. Like I didn't need to go any farther than, you know, who I was and what I liked in order to find my identity. But yeah, clearly there has been, you know, a huge imprint that it's made on my personality and my art and my craft. And I think the most trying part of it is involves how I speak. That's always been the part that I've felt most insecure about.
What do you mean?
Is that the world has wanted me to speak differently than I speak. You know, I speak like my mom. I speak like, you know, like the whitest white dude. I speak like a deaf comedy jam comedian doing an impression of a white guy. You know, it's like, that's how I've, you know, sort of grown up. And I even remember, you know, when I was a kid, every now and then you'd come upon somebody who would sort of question how I spoke and whether or not I was trying to be something I wasn't. It cannot be a coincidence that I decided to go into this career where my whole purpose is sort of altering the way I speak and experiencing these different characters. And I think maybe sort of proving in my soul that the way someone speaks has, you know, nothing to do with who they are. People have, you know, everybody has different accents. Everyone has different affectations. Everyone's still human. So, yeah, I've been very lucky to have a family who, you know, has welcomed me and not been hung up on anything racial, almost overlooking the fact that there was a racial difference. But I can honestly say I do feel like I missed out on some lessons from, you know, of what the African-American experience is like growing up. My father passed away in 1999. I knew him up until about 6 years old. I mean, I could have used some advice from my dad of, you know, how to deal with somebody who's accusing you of being shady in a mm-hmm. store. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to hear those things.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, and together they're Key and Peele. Their sketch comedy show is on Comedy Central. Let's take a short break here, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, and together they're Key and Peele that have their own sketch comedy show on Comedy Central. Did both of you do a lot of, you know, characters or impressions when you first auditioned for Mad TV?
I did more characters. I mean, I had a lot of characters kind of in my bag from Second City.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were some characters that had been incubating at the Second City in Chicago. And so, you know, when you're at Second City Chicago, kind of the unspoken thing is everybody's kind of, you're doing your work and you're making your art and you're having a good time. And it's really a kind of a fertile time in your life. But there's that thing in the back of your head that's saying, boy, you know, SNL might come calling or Mad TV might come calling. And so you're kind of like, I would just kind of catalog characters that I liked performing and that also that audiences seem to enjoy.
Jordan, what's one of the characters you developed early on that you could tell us about?
I was much more impression driven in my audition, and I mean, one of my impressions was I did Ja Rule. I did an impression of Ja Rule showing off his crib and cribs, and then on the other, you know, I went all the way to the other side. I did an impression of John Malkovich ordering a pizza, which. In which he does not want any of the extra bells and whistles. I just want a pepperoni pizza, please.
Hit it with some Morgan.
I didn't. Morgan Freeman, of course. Yeah. Morgan Freeman. I don't remember what the context was. As sure as the black dots all over my face, I did this impression. Yeah. I was a part of this group called Boom Chicago in Amsterdam, and that's where I met Seth Meyers, Ike Barinholtz, Jason Sudeikis, some really amazing comedy performers. And we did sketch and improv there in just a slightly different format than Keegan would have been doing at the Second City. But we had one short form improv game where the audience would shout out impressions and then they would shout out locations. And we would literally just on the spot, whatever impression celebrity they gave us, and location, we would have to become that celebrity in that location. And so I think in that process, I demystified the art of the impression for myself. And, you know, I think it's something that a lot of people think is magic, but it's, you know, just like anything else, you can learn to do it and get better at it.
Well, I regret to say, out of time. It's been so much fun to talk with both of you. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, who star in the Comedy Central TV series Key and Peele. They'll be back with new episodes in 2014. Their visit with Terry last month was one of our favorite interviews of the year. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Myers, John Sheehan, Heidi Simon, and Teresa Madden. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our assistant producer for online media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Sherrock directs the show. Audrey Bentham is our engineer and technical director, with additional engineering support from Kevin Griffin, Charlie Kyer, Adam Staniszewski, Julian Hertzfeld, and Joyce Lieberman. For Dave Davies and all of our other contributors and reviewers, and for Terry Gross, who is almost over her cold, I'm David Bianculli. We all wish you a happy and healthy new year.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness. On the web at melvilletrust.org. From American Jewish World Service, supporting women, girls, and LGBT communities worldwide at ajws.org. And from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives. On the web at Hewlett.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, Elton John reflects on his life and his early career when he says his extravagant costumes may have turned off some of his critics.
I was singing great songs, but I was also wearing, you know, a giant chicken outfit at the time and being helped on stage by Mr. Universe.
His new album is a much simpler affair. Join us.